Welcome to the podcast. I'm Larry Matthews. This is one in a series of podcasts recorded at the 3C Conference, Creatures, Crimes, and Creativity. The conference was held in Hunt Valley, Maryland, near Baltimore, and it featured dozens of writers. The conference was organized by Intrigue Publishing. The keynote speaker was Jeffrey Deaver, former journalist, folk singer, and international best-selling author, whose books are sold in 150 countries. He is one of the best-known novelists in the world. My first question for Jeffrey Deaver is, what makes an author successful?
I think an author needs to be attuned to the marketplace. We writers of popular fiction create a product, just like any other manufacturer. We were speaking a few minutes ago about computers, and we know that if a company creates an inferior product, the audience will go elsewhere. The same thing with authors. We need to be attuned to what readers enjoy. I happen to write thriller fiction, which means always in the back of my mind what is going to thrill my audience. I try to craft books that will not digress, that are not totally incredible. I push the limits of plotting a bit. I'm sometimes a little far-fetched with my twists and turns, but I always keep in mind, will this be a little too much for the reader? I stay away from gore. My books are not as violent as people think they are. They're actually rather subdued. I cut away before we see scenes of violence. I never imperil children. Well, I may imperil children and people, but I'll never hurt a child. I'll never kill an animal, for instance. The mistake that some authors make, I think, is that they feel they have an idea that they're going to write no matter what, without regard to how the audience will appreciate that. So I keep in mind that readers are gods all the time.
Well, you had to start at some point. So in your first book, your second book, your third book, how did you find readers and how did you find what they wanted?
I hate to go back to the business of writing, but it is a business. People don't buy, the analogy I use when I teach my courses is liver flavored toothpaste, because it doesn't taste good. And the lack of sales is an indication of what people like and what they don't like. Now, occasionally a very, very good book will be ignored. Occasionally a very, very bad book will spread throughout the marketplace. That's an anomaly. You just can't take that into account. You can't make rules based on that unusual occurrence. But I was disappointed that my first books, paperback originals, were not selling the way I wanted. And I went back and I reread them and tore them apart. And I realized what I was doing wrong. And some of those were the mistakes I mentioned earlier. I digressed a lot. I gave away suspense. I had too much interior thought and not enough crisp dialogue. When I changed that and began to outline my books ahead of time so that I did not get into a situation where I would create a book that came to loggerheads, and then I'd have to work around that. I learn in the outlining process that at a certain point, this story was not going to work. I'd have to revamp it completely, or sometimes even throw it out. You know, there have been a lot of books written that should not have been written. It's just the way it is. And I was guilty, I think, of assuming because I had an idea and a word processor, that idea should become a book, and it should not have become a book. When I began outlining, I realized I could work through that whole process ahead of time. And then, at the very end, I'd realize, eight months of outlining, no, this will be a good book. Then I could sit down and write the thing in 2 months or so.
So you went from being a pantser to a plotter.
Exactly, yeah.
So tell me about your outlining process. How do you do that?
Start with a very simple concept. In The Kill Room, my latest Lincoln Rhyme novel, the book began with this idea. I looked at the Anwar al-Awlaki killing, which was a U.S. drone strike killing a U.S. citizen. According to the administration, one of the few times that has happened, and I tend to believe the administration. But I thought, well, that's quite an interesting concept. What if that was treated as a murder case, conspiracy to commit murder. And someone wanted to prosecute the head of a government organization for that. Seemed like an interesting idea. What I just described to you was the first page of the outline. That's all I had. Over the next 8 months, I work on a very large chart, and I would put down ideas with post-it notes or 3x5 cards and say things to myself like, okay, Lincoln Rhyme now gets involved in the case. Here is where a hitman decides to stop Lincoln and or Amelia, and I'd post that up. And then there'd be a big gap in between that. I'd say, well, we need something interesting here. We'll do some kind of forensic work, because that's what Lincoln specializes in. Okay, that's good. We'll do that there. Now I need, we need to go to where this crime occurred, because the government is not going to kill somebody on U.S. soil. So I set the book in partly in the Bahamas. So we add some background for the Bahamas here. I could go on and on, because the outline ended up being about 160 pages, but you get the idea. Continually adjusting, continually rearranging, continually asking myself, do I give away suspense or do I build suspense? And then I spend probably most of the time on the endings, surprise endings, because I like plural, multiple twists and turns at the end.
Do you subscribe to the notion that the ending is the most important part of the book?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. You need to finish the book as if you're watching a nose-to-nose racehorse and you've got $1 million riding on one of those horses. I like to think readers are rooting for the hero, not necessarily, I suppose, but I need total emotional engagement when people are reading my books. And the ending is where that all comes together. Now, I have usually 3 or 4 plots in the book. I need a twist for each one of those. There has to be a big surprise, followed by another surprise, followed by another surprise. And then a coda, generally, sort of a softer reconciliation of some of the themes and the characters, not unlike a symphony orchestra, where the various movements, speed movements, I guess we'd say, adagio, andante, lento, vivace. We may start with the prologue that kind of states the theme that will then be repeated throughout the book, and then we come to the great crescendo, the end, and then a little coda at the end of that, kind of another sort of reconciliation.
Do you work within a certain word count?
Not intentionally, but my books tend to all end up about 110,000 to 120,000 words. Okay. That's really what I need to tell the story.
Okay. So let's talk about conferences like this. Mm-hmm. You're here, obviously very successful. Some other very successful authors are here, but there are many other people who are aspiring writers, people who've written manuscripts, hoping to get them published. So what kind of importance do you place on these events?
I think conferences are extremely important for 2 reasons. One is that writing is a craft and it can be learned. You're a journalist, I'm a former journalist, and the art of putting words together for clear communication is something that can be learned and needs to be learned. Books like Strunk and White's Elements of Style, Eats, Shoots, and Leaves, Woe is I, those are all titles of style guides about proper grammar, and that's not a feat subject. That's very important, so that if you say, for instance, I shot Larry, okay? I shot, comma, Larry, has a very different meaning from I shot Larry without the comma. And that's an extreme example, and I think no one writing a book would make that mistake. But there are many cases in which grammar and punctuation and syntax are fluid, and they can alter the subtle meanings for the story. So that's just one aspect of the craft that can be learned here, elements like writing by outline or by the seat of your pants. People need to hear the options there. Well, that's one important side, the craft of learning writing. The other is that it's a tough world out there now for mm-hmm. writers. We need to network. The competition I refer to as the honey boo-boo factor. There are lots of things that will take readers' attention away from books. and we need to make friends. We need to talk to publishers. We need to be a solid front in supporting this marvelous thing called written fiction.
So we're all really in the same entertainment pool, mm-hmm. just vying for the attention of readers,
and
watchers.
In the past, I've been writing full-time now for 25 years, and in the past 10 years, probably 10, I have seen an astonishing explosion of options for entertainment sources. It's just off the charts. I, for instance, rarely watch television on my television now. I watch TV all over the world on my laptop. I subscribe to a certain cable company in one of my houses that allows me to basically watch almost real time. Overseas, depending on the server, the internet service provider, you may be blocked from watching some things, and that's true for their programs over here. But generally, that's a just a whole new form of delivering the product. Video games, which I don't play too much. I have played some of them, but I don't have a lot of patience, and I get tired just shooting things, shooting mm-hmm. zombies and things. Those nonetheless are a very very viable entertainment form, and I think it's important to remember that I believe that a book is the most engaging emotional form of art to me. A lot of people disagree with that, but you know, we see a movie, the best movie, The Godfather, one of the greatest movies of all time. We love it, we talk about it. Did that stay with me as much as Mario Puzo's book? No, it didn't. The book I was totally captivated with. Lord of the Rings, the movie, I thought was well done. It was functional, a good, solid fantasy novel. I returned to the novels, Tolkien's novels, again and again and again. And I just think that the emotional takeaway from a novel is so strong that we need to make sure that it remains, I think, highest on the pedestal of our forms of entertainment.
And keep it in the minds of young people so they might develop a habit of that. Because you're right, a person with an iPad would have a choice of reading a Jeffrey Deaver novel or watching a movie or doing or playing a game or
on
doing
the same tablet, solitaire.
That's right.
Anything like that, that same delivery mechanism is available for all sorts of things, or answering email, or doing work, or texting their friends. I assume you can text on an iPad. I don't know, but I imagine you can.
Yeah.
You can certainly send emails. So we're up against that.
So finally, let's talk about your writing schedule. Do you write every day?
Mm-hmm. Write every day. It's basically a 9-to-5 or 9-to-6 job for me, usually 6 days a week. Much of that is writing, but I also have a lot of business things to take care of, the adjunct work, interviews such as this, reviewing contracts. My books are published in about 150 countries. I get the contracts in English, but I have to rely on other people to tell me the terms of art for various countries. But I still need to look through those. I need to sign them, need to ask questions about that, need to plan out schedules, need to do events like this. So when I first started this, I thought all I would do is sit in a dark room and write, but that's not the case. I also do a great deal of research. I travel quite a bit, both for the touring, but also to do research. I'm a photographer as well, and I take a lot of pictures of places that I hope to incorporate into a book. I take pictures of unusual looking people, architectural things that I think that I have a pretty good memory, but just looking at things, it's not going to come back to me. So I have files of pictures and notes I've taken about what I think might work well in a book. And that all kind of eats into the time, which I thoroughly enjoy doing that. But it's really isn't enough just to sit in front of your word processor and turn out a story. It's you need to be a full service entertainment operation.
Do you ever find yourself working on two books at once? You said you take 8 months to outline a book, and are you sort of like writing a book that you
already outlined? Well, that's exactly the way to put it. I can't probably, I have never done this, but I suspect I would not be able to produce the prose for two books simultaneously, but I could outline one while I'm writing the prose for the other, or write one while I'm editing another one. And that actually is a beneficial process, because sometimes you just get tired of sitting on your rear end and pounding out a copy for 8 hours. You want to go to the outline process. That's more dynamic. You stand up, you look at your board and chart, and pace a little bit, and jot notes. And so this year, in fact, I've got The Kill Room out, and next week, or in 2 weeks, The October List is being published, and that's a novel of mine that goes backwards. We open, page one is chapter 36, and we go backward in time to the Friday, that would be 2 days before. It opens Sunday night, and it goes backward to Friday morning, and it was great fun to write. And that I illustrate that with original photographs that are both, they both have clues in them, and they illustrate the story. And some are kind of ironic puns. When we get to the beginning of the book, that is the final pages, we learn that the pictures we've seen may not be quite what we thought they were.
So what advice do you have for somebody just starting out, a 20-year-old Jeffrey Deaver?
I think the most important advice is this, to remember that you are writing a product for a reader. You have to know what they want. If you're working in the commercial field like I do, as I do, forgive me, if you're working in the commercial field, you need to find what books are popular and tear them apart. Outline them. See why they are popular. See why Michael Connelly's books sell so well. See why Dennis Lehane does what he does so well. And then if that's not your genre, pick the Hugo winners, if you like science fiction, or pick fantasy. But just study what they do, because you can't sit down and just have the book come out. Intentions are not enough. You need to understand that the reason a book is successful is that it opens up people's hearts to the story. That you have to keep in mind. The second thing is outline. And I'm on record as saying, well, it's a very subjective process, but you need to know where you're going. Some people don't outline. God bless them. They probably have clearer minds and better memories than mine. You don't need to do my outline, but plan ahead. And then you can sit down and write. And I guess the third bit of advice I give is that you're going to be rejected. But remember, rejection is a speed bump. It's not a brick wall.
Jeffrey Deaver, thank you.
Thank you, Larry.